From Italy to the Canadian Rockies and beyond, Gazette Travel makes exploring the world easy and stress-free. See our full lineup of tours at thegazette.com/travel.
Welcome back to another episode of Hawk Off the Press. My name is Madison Herzig. I am the Iowa Athletics beat reporter, and it is March Madness, officially. It is time for some postseason basketball, so we are going to focus on the men's side of the tournament this week. And for that, I have brought in a good friend of mine, Chapel Fowler from the State, who covers Clemson basketball. Chapel, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I think this is the first podcast I've been on that has an intro video, so it feels pretty high level. That was cool.
There you go. All right, I love it. I know it. For me personally, I was very excited to see the matchup between Iowa Clemson. I've already seen the social media memes everywhere, people trying to pick the 8-9 games in their bracket, and Iowa Clemson has apparently been the stumper so far. Everyone's kind of unsure about that one, but I, at least personally, I was very excited to see that I was going to have an opportunity to get to work with you again, because, well, we don't get to do that very often anymore. Let's jump into here a little bit. So this first round matchup, I was a 9 seed, Clemson's the 8 seed in the south side of the bracket. The winner more than likely would go on to face top seeded Florida. That's second round. We're not worried about that yet. What were your first impressions of this matchup on Selection Sunday?
Yeah, I think probably before the matchup itself, I was interested about Clemson's seeding. On that list that the committee put out, they were the number 29 overall seed, so essentially the best of the 8 seeds. And I didn't know – so they won 2 games at the ACC tournament. One of them was quad 2 over Wake Forest. One of them was quad 1 over UNC Tar Heels. Kind of a solid resume boost at the end of the year, so I didn't know if that was going to maybe get them – off the 8 seed line, which obviously the benefit there, like you just mentioned, you're not playing number one Florida in the second line, you're playing a 2 seed, which is still very hard, but maybe a little bit different. So, excuse me. First of all, I was just wondering if that was going to change at all. Obviously, that didn't. I think part of that might have been the fact that they lost one of their starting forwards to a torn ACL in the tournament, and maybe the committee took note of that because it seems like injuries definitely played a role in, you know, where UNC was seated and some other teams. And I heard the selection chair talking about that. So I was wondering if they were going to get off the 8 seed line, which is where they were projected, but that's where they ended up. But yeah, I think this is very much a coin flip game. Like all the, whether it's point spreads or analytics, very 50-50. If you look at who's picking who in the bracket, I'm sure it's the same. And historically, this is always like a, basically a 50-50 matchup in the tournament in terms of who wins. I mean, they're just so close. So I'm expecting just that, like close and probably come down to one or two plays and couple possessions game, not exactly a blowout or anything. I mean, I don't know exactly what to expect. I guess that's why I'm here, to learn about Iowa as well and inform people on Clemson. But it's a very classic, like these teams have barely watched any film of each other, and now it's time to spend a week diving into the Big Ten or the ACC and see if you can come out with a win. And then probably
exactly. And it's one of those matchups where at its core it's like the rival conference matchup too, which I think is fun, especially in basketball. I feel like Big Ten ACC basketball is always in a conversation of like which conference is better, whereas like sometimes you have the Big Ten SEC conversation on the football. But maybe it's because I've done a little bit of ACC in the past, but I was kind of really excited to see that Iowa was matched up with an ACC team for this first round game. I think that Clemson is probably one of the only teams in the ACC that has a similar playing style to Iowa. Hawkeyes are a little bit slower. They're very defensive minded. They don't score 80 points every single game. Clemson's kind of the same way, which I think is kind of a little bit beneficial to Iowa because of the fact that you're not battling like a pace of play margin here. But also I'm intrigued because usually pace of play is sometimes how Iowa's been able to rise to the talent level of some other, maybe higher teams. Like I think back to the Michigan game where Iowa took them down to the wire right at the end of the regular season. things like that. So that's what makes it fun. But one of the biggest things to take note of this matchup, at least when you look at the players on paper, is obviously the injury to Carter Welling that happened in the ACC tournament. I'm just curious, looking at some of the stuff that's been going on throughout that game, how has Clemson head coach Brad Barnell managed the lineup and rotation since the ACC tournament concluded, trying to fill in that?
Yeah, it's a huge loss. I think they'll feel that against Iowa. They felt that against UNC. They certainly felt it against Duke, where they couldn't buy a basket for like 9 minutes to end the first half. I'd say Welling was probably, easily one of their top five guys, probably their third or fourth best player on most nights. He was a super bouncy, like 6'10 forward. He was their best shot blocker, their best dunker. And on top of that, they lost another guy, Zach Foster, who's a freshman. Now, this was back in December when they played South Carolina, the school you covered for us as an intern back then. So they've lost two players to torn ACLs that were probably, I'd say, you know, Foster wasn't a starter, but probably top eight rotation players. And kind of the cruel reality of that is those were probably their two most explosive guys as well. So they're even more in this kind of like muck it up and, you know, slow down teams and make them play a tougher style of basketball now than they were even last week, because their personnel just kind of dictates that. So they have another transfer forward named Nick Davidson, who will probably start alongside RJ Godfrey if they want to go big, or they might just stick another guard in the lineup and have Davidson come off the bench. But they're definitely down like one of their big men. They're already not a super tall team. Like RJ Godfrey, their other starting forward, I think is 6'7 or 6'8. And Davidson's about the same. So they're not, you know, trotting out a 7-footer down there. And it's kind of some undersized but effective and pretty scrappy power forwards. And then a lot of kind of guard forward tweeners that are like 6'1 to 6'4. So rebounding is going to be at a premium. I'm not sure how good of a rebounding team Iowa is, or if they have any 7-footers down there in the paint, but that's a spot where I think anybody can take advantage of Clemson now, just because that Welling loss in the tournament was huge. Actually, the second year in a row, they've lost like a rotation player to an ACC tournament injury. Dylan Hunter, who's their starting point guard now,
he broke
his hand last year in a really random kind of like stuck his ball into a, like handed to a play. Like it wasn't even like a nasty looking play, but yeah, he broke his hand last year and they were hurt by that. And yeah, so 2 years in a row with an unfortunate ACC tournament injury that I think will definitely, you'll see that on Friday, what it looks like for them to not have one of their best guys out there.
Yeah, I do remember that. I do remember the Dylan Hunter injury from covering the ACC tournament last year and being like, it felt almost like a freak injury too.
Yes.
In a sense, if I remember the play correctly, just kind of like, what just happened? But it is interesting to hear that Clemson is a little bit undersized. Iowa, especially in the grand scheme of the Big Ten, is considered a pretty undersized program, especially with its forwards. No 7-footers. They've been pretty reliant on starting forward Cam Manuel, kind of at that five, who has played pretty well these last couple of games. He's definitely kind of turned a corner. He had like a couple weeks where he wasn't necessarily playing the consistent level of basketball, but that kind of almost leads me to the player that for me, and I think for a lot of Iowa fans, the player to watch for this tournament is Alvaro Folgueras. He's 6'10", he's a junior, he's been coming off the bench. He had been filling in the couple games where, I think back to the Illinois game in January where Tavion Banks was sick, he's usually kind of been at that four spot. Folgueras stepped into that starting role. He's been, in my opinion, I think he's a catalyst for Iowa's NCAA tournament chances. He's very, very good when he's confident in his shot and he's confident in his playing skills. But I think when it's a little bit difficult or he's heavily guarded, I think that's where he might kind of clamp up. But the last couple games, ever since the Ohio State game on February 25th, he scored 20 points in that game. He has not reached double figures set. So he's a big that's definitely one to watch. Cam Manuel, I mentioned, is kind of been the starter throughout this year. He's played pretty consistently these last couple games. I think the thing that stands out to me is the fact that he's put together some double figure performances these last couple games. He had 10 points against Maryland, 9 against Ohio State, both in the Big Ten tournament in Chicago last week, and then 14 against Michigan. So he was able to find success when he was undersized against the Wolverines kind of toward the end of the regular season. But I do agree with you in the sense that if maybe guard play will be important, but I think what happens down in the paint is going to be the biggest deal. Now, I want to ask something here. When it comes to Clemson's regular season, taking a look and almost kind of just doing the eye test, it feels like Clemson had some really good wins and then also some not so good losses. I'm curious, was that something that you felt like how this season's progressed as well? Was there something that Clemson maybe figured out in the later half of the season they didn't have at the beginning, or vice versa? I know you mentioned the other ACL injury in December. How much of that has been an impact into this picture as well?
Yeah, it's been very up and down as a season. I mean, you play 30-something games, you'll probably have ebbs and flows, but it was a really transfer-heavy team. You know, they return one player who scored a basket for last year's team on this year's roster. And part of that is because they had two guys who did the unique, you know, red shirt and then come back to the same school. So it's not like they turned over 100% of their roster, but it was like 80%. So I think as all those transfers just played together and kind of gelled, that probably helped a little bit. Going back to non-conference, if you or any of the listeners remember, they played BYU in the Jimmy V Classic and lost on a buzzer beater after leading by like 20 points in the first half. They had a close loss to Alabama in the ACC-SEC Challenge. Kind of got through the rest of non-conference pretty unscathed. And then started 10-1 in the ACC, which was kind of a crazy run for, again, a team that was so new and was not really considered like a national player, wasn't ranked or anything. They got up high, maybe number 18 or something in the AP poll. And then they lost four in a row in the ACC. And that included some of those bad losses you're talking about, like at Wake Forest, not a very good team. Lost at home to Virginia Tech. Just kind of some losses. You're like, this is not exactly like indicative of a great March. They did beat Louisville near the end of the regular season, but they still closed losing. I think it was five of their last seven ACC games. And kind of entered the tournament needing like a little bit of a confidence boost. And those two wins, obviously, in Charlotte, is actually the first time they've won two games in a single ACC tournament since 2008. They've really just struggled in the ACC tournament, even under Brunell, who's done so many other great things. So I think the fact that they just didn't go one and done in the tournament is probably like a confidence boost that they needed. But I think the limitations of this team are pretty clear. Like there's not, and Brunell has been open about this. He's always said, you know, we're better as a team than like any one individual player. Like they don't have a guy who can go Bennett Sturts on you and drop 30 or something on a random night. They have some guards that can get hot from three occasionally, but just the inconsistency. I mean, they play 9-10 guys, 15 plus minutes per game for a reason. And, you know, part of that is they do have a pretty deep and competitive roster, but it's also like they don't have a go-to guy. So that can help you start 10-1 in the ACC. That can also lead to a four-game losing streak. And when their guards aren't hitting shots like they did against Duke in that ACC semifinal that wasn't close at all, you can kind of get in those ruts. And I think that's what happened late in the year. But also, you know, the defense is there, and that's helped them at times as well.
Yeah, I think that's something really worth mentioning too, the fact that you have RJ Godfrey, who's the only player averaging double figures right now, especially with Carter Welling out for the season. RJ is averaging 11.9 points per game, so just shy of 12. But everybody else is basically right around that like 5 to 8 point threshold. I think it's the Tigers have nine players with at least 5.4 points per game this year. So there's not a secondary scorer aside from Godfrey. If Godfrey's on, then you can tell, like, I feel like it'll be something where it's like, if he's hitting shots, we'll definitely see it. But aside from that, how has that been a sticking point for this Clemson team of trying to find somebody to maybe help Godfrey or to step up in those games?
Yeah, this is something interesting that you'll probably see on Friday watching the game that they did in non-conference. Now they've gone back to almost like a five-in, five-out hockey substitution. Now that's impacted, obviously, by not having Welling. So it's like nine people now that they're doing that with. So they can't go a true five-in, five-out. But they have done that a lot. They did that a lot in non-conference and early in ACC play where they'll just bring in like wholesale four guys off the bench, five guys off the bench. Just to switch up the energy. And they were like really intentional about wanting to get back to that in the ACC tournament because they hadn't done it in a while. You know, it's hard. Like you don't want to just throw in a true freshman, like in a tight ACC game. But like, it really worked for them. Like the bench unit scrimmages together all the time against the starting unit, and they know each other's playing styles. This is guys like Chase Thompson is a freshman forward who usually comes in with the bench unit. Justin Porter is a guard who has been starting for them and has been coming off the bench more recently. Nick Davidson, the forward we mentioned, is usually in that bench unit. So it's kind of just a different style. And they are not afraid to do that. Like, they'll usually play nine guys by like the under 14 media timeout or something. Like, their first substitution is usually like everybody. And there are pros and cons to doing that. But again, when you're a team that doesn't have a true secondary scorer, you're kind of just looking to see, okay, who's going to be hot on this given night? Who's going to be our number two behind Godfrey, who transferred to Georgia last year, came back to Clemson, and has really just like tripled his production, it feels like. And like, I don't know where they'd be without him, because his post play and just ability to muck it up down low and score and give them like even 12 points per game. Like, they need all those 12 points per game, because all their numbers in terms of offense and where they rank nationally in the ACC, it's not standout. So they definitely win with that slow it down style. But yeah, part of that is just kind of seeking, you know, who can be hot on any given night. Sometimes it's nobody, and that's why you lose four straight in the middle of ACC play. But they're very much, and I think that points per game stat you mentioned is indicative of it too. They are, they're kind of just like searching for the hits on any given night, mm-hmm. and it's been moderately successful.
Yeah, I don't think Iowa's faced a team that does a ton of tried and true like hockey style changes throughout this season, at least none that I can remember, especially throughout Big Ten play. It might have happened maybe once or twice in non-conference play, if at all, but it's interesting that they're taking that approach. I do want to ask a little bit about coach, because it wasn't too long ago that Clemson was about 3 or 4 minutes away from a Final Four a couple years ago, and I know you were following that team because I remember texting you about that game while it was going on. But Coach Brad Barnell's experience in the NCAA tournament is pretty extensive. How much does that help this Clemson team that is a little bit different and is, as you've mentioned earlier, there's a lot of transfer pieces that are involved with this year's team?
Yeah, I think it helps a decent amount. He's had the same staff for a really long time, and obviously those guys are involved with identifying and bringing in these transfers that have been successful for a few years now. You know, generally when they've made the tournament under Brunell, they are usually going to win at least one game. I think this is this will be like his fifth or sixth trip with Clemson to the tournament. And I think they've gone one and done, maybe just once, maybe twice. I don't know. But obviously you have that Elite Eight run in there. So generally, like, he is a pretty good like game planning coach, I think, when you give him like a week. And I'd put probably McCollum in the same category here. Like, you give him a week to really dive in on one opponent, they can probably come up with a pretty good plan. You know, now whether you have the player talent or shot making to execute it is a different question. But he's used to this. You know, he's been around the block a few times. This is actually the first time they've made three straight tournaments under him, and it's come in years like 14, 15, and 16. So it's very much like a late career surge for Brad, who was on the hot seat just a few years ago. You know, when the AD has to hold – AD has to hold a press conference saying, hey, the coach is being retained. That's usually a sign that things aren't going well. But since that presser, that was after the 2022-23 season, you know, he's made three straight tournaments. He's gotten two contract extensions. He'll retire at Clemson, I'm sure. So, like, he's – you know, on Suction Sunday, like, he was in a good mood. He was loose. This is not exactly new to him, to his staff. It's new to a lot of their players, which may be an issue. But I think there's probably like a very moderate edge there, probably not much. I mean, it's going to come down to players. But yeah, he's been around the block a few times. He's coaching a good number of tournament games, obviously some big ones, Sweet 16, Elite Eight. So I don't think he's going to particularly be phased, and they'll probably have a good plan in place. But, you know, they had a good plan in place, they thought, against Duke, and then they went 9 minutes without a shot and we're down 19 at half and that game was over. So that could easily happen as well.
Well, and I think one of the things that's interesting is the fact that Brunell has done a pretty good job of just kind of maintaining that consistency since that 22-23 season press conference. Just won his 300th game as the Tigers head coach earlier this year. He's at 316 now. So this was a little bit earlier in the season, but this will be a nice way to segue into another question I have for you. But one of the first things out of Brunell's, I guess, mini presser media scrum following Selection Sunday was talking about Bennett Sturts and how to slow him down. So I'm curious, how much have you learned about Bennett Sturts in the last, I guess, 48 hours since Selection Show, a little bit less than now? And what could you take away from Brunell's first impressions of Bennett Sturts?
I think he's got their attention, and he should. Just look at the numbers alone. You don't have to watch the guy play. If you just look at box scores, like, this is a guy who obviously followed his coach and seems to fit right in, like, to a power conference system. I mean, Clemson has a number of, like, mid-major guys who have not been able to replicate their production at the ACC level like they were in the Mountain West or something, but it doesn't seem to be a problem for this kid. He kind of seems like to have the makings of, like, a March hero who just goes crazy for, you know, 8 3-pointers or something and goes, gets hot maybe in the second round against Florida. But yeah, like, that's obviously their engine. And I'd say Clemson's guards are probably, there's probably not one elite defender among them, but again, the team defense is pretty sound. Like, that's something that Brunell and Clemson really just hammer into guys, is their defensive game plan. And they really take pride in that. And, you know, if guys don't play good defense, they don't start, they don't play as much. So, I mean, I'm sure Clemson, they're not going to, like, run zone or double him every possession or something crazy like that. But they'll probably have some strategies to slow him down. Don't know if they'll work, because there's probably been a lot of teams that have tried to do the same thing. You were mentioned. So what makes him – what do you think makes him so good right now? And how has he been able to translate from mid-major to this, like, so easily?
I think the biggest thing for me is his ability to just read a basketball play, read a defense, has always stood out to me. I think his basketball IQ is off the charts. And even when I was able to look back at some Drake games before being able to really kind of focus in on the Iowa basketball season with him, you could see that. Like, you could see he was doing such a good job of picking apart a defense when he had the ball. I think his ability to also support his teammates has been really helpful. I think his ability as a facilitator is really good. If you can make the people around you also succeed, that's obviously a sign that you're doing pretty well and you know the sport pretty well too. I also have to say, I think the fact that Sturts is just a very calm person. Like, he's calm on the court. He's not necessarily, he's pretty loud. You can hear him. You can definitely hear him talking on the court, but he's not overly emotional throughout the game. I don't feel like there's a ton of moments where we see him, I guess, lose his cool or kind of go, like, above and beyond. And that almost kind of balances out Iowa head coach Ben McCollum quite a bit, because Ben McCollum is extremely, extremely emotional. You can see him kind of, like, get into it throughout the game. And he's very open about it as well. And I feel like the fact that they balance each other out that nicely bodes well too. I think that they almost kind of complement each other in, like, a yin and yang style. So I think that's worked. But McCollum has always said he thought that Bennett Sturts was a mid-major player in high school. Then he brought him in at D2 and was like, no, this is a high major kid pretty quickly. Like, he realized Sturts' potential pretty early on. It was just a matter of getting him to reach that potential. And he has. And at least I think so. I think that he's been really fun to watch. And we've seen teams consistently double team him. We've seen them try and go zone. And just kind of it reached a point where it feels like almost a lot of Big Ten teams are almost kind of throwing anything starts and seeing what sticks. And I will never forget, I think it was after the Iowa State game in December. We had asked him, like, you know, you were being double, triple teamed throughout this game quite often. Like, how do you handle that? And he was like, if they want to play 4-on-4 instead of 5-on-5, that sounds good to me. So I always think back to that quote. It was right at the beginning of the season. And just the confidence that he has is just off the charts. I think that's, more than anything, that's what makes him so dangerous. Because the reality is Iowa basketball itself as a program has found success in the month of March. But Ben McCollum has found a lot of recent success in the month of March. And I think that's huge. I mean, he's won 4 Division II national titles. He took Drake pretty far last year. He won 31 consecutive conference tournament games. That was dating all the way back to 2016 prior to this year. The man knows how to win a game in March.
I was a high school senior. Yeah, I was a graduating high school senior in 2016.
There you go. But he's done a very good job in that. And this is a team that has tournament experience. They just don't have a ton of tournament experience together. You have a lot of the Drake players who played together last year, but then also you have Cam Minyau, who transferred in from Wyoming prior to going to Drake. You have Alvaro Folgueras, who was with Robert Morris, who was in the tournament. So you've got players that have just general tournament experience as well. So that hopefully that answers a little bit of your question. And if there are any Clemson listeners out there, you kind of learn a little bit about, and it starts here. But as we start kind of winding down, I think the biggest question more than anything else, I like to almost kind of ask this, and I'll give you the reverse question of it after, but what does Clemson need to do to beat Iowa on Friday?
Make 3-point shots. I think they did that really well in the ACC tournament when they beat Wake and UNC, and that did not happen against Duke. And again, when their guards are not making timely shots, that puts a lot more pressure on, you know, post play to be the majority of their production. And that's just not a total winning recipe, especially in modern college basketball. So you got to look for guys like, Budda Johnson, Justin Porter, Ace Buckner, Dylan Hunter, who I mentioned earlier, their senior point guard, really good ball handler and assist man and good plus minus guy, but really has not been much of a scorer this year. I think his stats are probably just the same or maybe a little bit worse even from last year when he was coming off the bench. So he has really not been able to truly find his shot for a long time now, it feels like. So maybe this is a time for him to step up. But, yeah, I think it's got to be improved guard play, because that has just been kind of up and down for Clemson this year. And that's – I mean, you got to have a good guard to win in March, right? Like, you got to have somebody who's not phased, bringing up the ball under pressure while fans are screaming, and somebody who can get you a bucket. And R.J. Godfrey's a really good player in the post. And he can occasionally, go ISO from the top of the key or something, but he is not, going to break you down with six dribbles and hit a step back. Like, he's more of a, get myself in position or grab an offensive rebound guy. So you need somebody who can come down and get hot and hit a couple threes and heat check and take someone off the dribble. And it's kind of been a rotating cast of who can and can't do that for Clemson. So I'd say they need one of their guards to go for, maybe like 15 to 20 points at least, and have that kind of carry them.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Yeah, I think that's a good point. And honestly, it makes a lot of sense when you look at this team, at least on paper, that it's just almost like it feels like they need that March star to arrive. So now I'll ask the inverse of this. What does Iowa need to do to be able to beat Clemson on Friday?
I think just get Sturts going. Let him do his thing. Iowa's lost something like 7 of their last 10 games. Is that right? Or they've kind of been on a late season slide?
A little bit, yes. Yeah. They had a 3-game losing streak to kind of close out the season. And then they went 1-1 in the Big Ten tournament.
Yeah. And Clemson, I guess, was probably not in as much of the same boat now. But they lost 5-7 to end the regular season. So I guess these are kind of two teams that are on like general downward trends since like mid-February or something. But I think get Sturts going and then just understand. I mean, if they watch that Duke game at all, if you play Clemson tough defensively and make them take a bunch of hard shots, they're not the best like shot-making team. And then that can, like, I kept coming back to this, like they went like 9 minutes without a field goal against Duke. It's like 14 of the last 15 shots in the first half. Like, that's something that can happen to this team because, again, they just don't have a lot of one-on-one elite scores. So I think if you're Iowa, like, you should be very motivated defensively and see, what can happen when you really just lock in and play sound, steady, solid defense against Clemson. And, a 10-point lead becomes 15, becomes 20 really quickly if you do that. And, it's a veteran group, but obviously, you don't miss 14 of 15 shots in a tournament game, ACC tournament game, if you're not, like, feeling a little shook up confidence-wise. Like, those misses add up. And they certainly affected Clemson in their last game. So something they're susceptible to.
Well, it's interesting. I know you keep going back to the Duke semifinals game where they had that massive scoring draw. Iowa's been the victim of that themselves a few times. That was a part of the reason why they fell to Ohio State in the third round of the Big Ten tournament. They had some momentum going. They did a really great job setting up a run in the second half against Maryland in that second round game. But the third round game against the Buckeyes, they've had their fair share of 4 or 5 6 minute scoring droughts, or not or field goal droughts. Maybe they might be able to get to the line occasionally, but it's something that's plagued Iowa as well. So I think that's also going to be key to it, especially considering how defensive minded both of these teams are. These are two teams that very much like to force their opponent to make the extra pass, and Iowa has succumbed to that a couple times throughout this season. There have been moments where it feels like the Hawkeyes are setting up potentially really good shots for a lesser shot because they're almost making that pass. And so I'm curious, did you see something similar to that against Duke during that 9 minute drought, or was it literally just any shot that just they were not getting a bucket at that point?
I mean, probably a combination. Duke is so good defensively, the rotations and everything. And looking back at some clips of that, I mean, they are locked in. That team could easily win the championship this year, I think. They're watching them in person down two starters. Like, whew, they did not miss a beat. But, yeah, I mean, just against those, like, elite teams, that's where the Clemson has struggled this year. You know, I wouldn't call BYU or Alabama elite teams. Maybe, like, upper-tier tournament teams or just tournament teams. In general, I mean, their quad one record kind of shows that as well. I think there's something like, I don't know, 3-9, roughly, something like that. You know, like they're kind of 50-50 when it comes to a game against a team that's like truly at or above their talent level. They've cleaned up against all the other teams. You know, they're not racking up quad four losses out here or anything. That's why they're in the tournament, despite losing, you know, 5 of their last 7 ACC games. Like, their tournament status was never in doubt through all that because they've done enough work non-con wise and in the conference against the teams that they should be to get there. But I think that's always has kind of been this team's ceiling. And again, it's something Brunell has been like kind of surprisingly open about, you know, about we're not a elite team in terms of sheer talent compared to a lot of the other top people in our league. So we need everybody to play as one. We need guards to hit shots. When we scheme something up, we need them to execute it. You know, the fact that they're in the tournament this year, I wasn't sure that was going to happen, given all the roster just shift from last year. You win 27 games, you lose basically every starter from that team to graduation or the portal. But they're back in it, so they'll have a chance. But, yeah, I think that this will be a good slowdown opening matchup, and we'll see who comes out on top. I think, yeah, like the styles are kind of funny. And these are two guys that were both in the running for Indiana's job last year. So it's kind of like a matchup of former IU candidates, two kind of gritty Midwestern guys. You know, Brunell's a Big Ten guy. He grew up somewhere in Indiana, I think, and went to
Evansville. Yeah, not too far. Yep.
So he's very he's very much like a Big Ten coach in the ACC. So this might feel like a Big Ten conference game on Friday in Tampa.
Well, maybe that'll bode well for some Iowa fans hearing that, but it'll be interesting. One more fun tidbit that we'll make sure to sneak in there. This is the first time these two teams have ever met in the postseason, but it'll be the fifth all-time meeting between the two. First since November of 2022, they met in a non-conference game. Iowa won that one. Hawkeyes have the 3-1 all-time record against the Tigers. However, it's March. It's the postseason. I almost feel like you might think differently here, but I almost feel like March Madness records are like an entirely separate conversation than just like an all-time record, just because things are so different. But that game will tip off at 5:50 Central Time, 6:50 Eastern. I feel like I got to make both clear now because we're talking about two people in two different time zones here. But 5:50 Central, 6:50 Eastern. That is on TNT. For that first round game, winner will more than likely take on the University of Florida. That game will be in Tampa, so that'll feel like probably a very true road game for either team if they somehow end up facing the Gators, especially just considering where it's at. But Chapel, thank you so much for joining. It's always a pleasure getting to talk to you. I look forward to seeing you in Tampa, but thank you so much for joining us this week.
Yeah, I'll see you at – this is a funny story quickly. So it's Benchmark International Arena is the name of the arena in Tampa where the Lightning play. That name changed like 6 months ago because I went to the Women's Soccer Board to help out my colleague with South Carolina Gamecocks women's basketball coverage, and it was called Amalie Arena in April 2026. So they put out the bracket. I'm like, okay, where are they playing in Tampa? Benchmark Arena, where the heck is that? And then I realized it was the same arena, just a – corporate name sponsor change. So I'm still getting used to Benchmark International Arena as the location instead of Amalie. But yes, I'll see you at Benchmark International Arena. I guess that's another, is that a bank investment firm? I honestly, I don't know.
I would guess so.
Yeah. But
I will still be calling it Amalie Arena for the foreseeable future, just because I'm terrible about
everybody
that.
Everybody down there, I think, still does that, according to our now intern, who's a Florida guy. He says that Amalie Arena is still the preferred name. But yeah, there don't want any corporate PR people mad at me, so I'll stick with the chart.
All right. Well, if you guys like this content, Hawk Off the Press comes out every single week with a brand new guest each time. And there's also a free newsletter with the exact same name, Hawk Off the Press, that you can sign up for at thegazette.com. Thank you guys so much for watching, and we will see you next time.
Travel should be simple. With Gazette Travel, every detail is handled. You just show up and enjoy with fellow Iowans. View available trips at thegazette.com/travel.